The kind of fat or oil you choose to cook with can make or break a pie crust, a pancake, eggs, or almost any dish. But before you reach for that Crisco olive oil or butter, it might be a good idea to consider the effect that oil or fat is going to have on your body. On today's Please Explain, we will consider the balance between taste, chemistry, and nutrition when it comes to cooking with oils and fats. And here to help us are Daniel Gritzer, Culinary Director at Sirius Eats, and Rebecca Blake, Director of Clinical Nutrition at Mount Sinai Beth Israel. Welcome back, Daniel, and welcome to you, Rebecca, for the first time.
Thanks.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And to our listeners, if you have a question about what oil or fat to choose when you're cooking at home or about how certain oils or fats might affect your nutrition or health, give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org or tweet us at Leonard Lopate. Daniel, earlier this year, researchers in Australia published a paper about what it would take for fat to be classified as the sixth taste. What does fat add to the taste or feel of a dish?
Oh, boy. Well, fat does several things. One is fat can add flavor on its own. If you're talking about a fat that has its own flavor, like butter, extra virgin olive oil, for instance, fat also can absorb the flavors of other things because there are molecules and flavor molecules, that kind of thing, that are fat soluble. So if you cook with fat, the fat can take certain flavors out of the food you're cooking and deliver them when you eat it.
When do you want an oil that's flavorful, and when would you want one that has a mostly neutral taste?
This is the big question that you have to decide every time you cook, and to a degree, it's a personal decision. Do I want to taste this fat, or do I not want to taste this fat? There are certainly, I think, rules of thumb, like maybe you're making a salad, and you want to taste the extra virgin olive oil in the salad. Maybe you're baking, and you don't want to taste the extra virgin olive oil in your baked good. Or maybe you do.
Why do some people put oil in a pan even when they're cooking something that has high fat content, like a marbled steak?
Yes. So as you cook a steak, for example, that has a high fat content, that fat will render into the pan. But before that happens, if you were to put a steak into a hot pan, the steak will actually chemically bond to the metal. And stick, just fuse to it, and you're going to have a hard time getting it off. It's even more of a problem with something like fish that's a delicate protein where the fish was just going to tear and fall apart, which I think a lot of people have probably experienced. So what the fat does is it acts as this very thin layer. It's a great conductor of heat, and so when you bring that steak down into the pan before, even though it's this super thin layer of oil, right as it's approaching the pan, it's going to touch that oil, and the proteins on the surface of the steak are going to rapidly change.
Any oil?
If you're doing high heat cooking frequently, it's good to use a neutral oil with a high smoke point, meaning that it takes...
We'll get to smoke points.
Okay, we'll get to that. But you could use butter. It'll smoke and burn and add a sort of toasty burnt butter flavor, but it's possible.
Rebecca, why do certain types of oils and fats often seem to be in a trend? Things like coconut and grapeseed oil and even lard have all had their moments, and then there's a backlash.
Always. This is the curse and blessing of my field. Curse because it's always changing and people latch onto an idea. Daniel and I were actually just speaking about this offline, and then we've got to correct it. But a blessing because I guess nutritionists are always going to be needed. So anyway, keeps me employed. But what I will say is that a lot of it comes from health or perceived health benefits of certain fats. So
are some fats good for you?
Some fats are very good for you, such as the fats that we find in the olive, such as the fats we find in an avocado, the fat we find in salmon and other fatty fish like mackerel. Very, very heart-healthy fats. And when we say heart-healthy, we mean not contributing to the clogging of your arteries, and if anything, possibly contributing to the raising of the good cholesterol, the HDL cholesterol, and then the ratio lowering, improving the ratio.
So bad fats are mostly bad because of cholesterol?
Bad fats are mostly bad because, exactly, they are in some ways contributing to clogging of the arteries. And you can actually visualize it when you see the type of fat you're talking about. We talk about saturated fats. We talk about unsaturated fats. So a saturated fat is a fat that is mostly solid at room temperature.
And then we talked about polyunsaturated fats.
Those are
I
the
never
best.
Understood that. How could it be poly and then un?
It's even more unsaturated.
Uh-huh.
Like saturated probably on many, I'm assuming the poly goes to many, many of the chemical bonds.
Daniel, the type of oil or fat that you might want to use in a dish often depends on what you mentioned earlier, the smoke point. What mm-hmm. is the smoke point?
So the smoke point is quite literally the point at which this fat is going to begin producing smoke. It's a complicated thing because even if you consult a smoke point chart and you'll get specific temperatures, this fat smokes at 450 degrees Fahrenheit and this other one at 350. The truth is there's quite a bit of variation even talking about a specific type of fat. But as a rule of thumb, for a lot of cooking, you want to stay below the smoke point. If you're deep frying, you don't want to deep fry in a fat that's heavily smoking.
So high smoke point things are good for?
High heat cooking. So sauteing, searing, deep frying for sure.
And then low smoke points, things like low heat, like eggs?
So yeah, if you're cooking something that's more gentle, then you don't need to be, meaning on a lower heat, you don't need to be as concerned with the point at which this fat is going to begin smoking. And so it maybe you're very gently cooking an egg, in which case, yeah, sure, maybe butter, which has a lower smoke point, is a better choice.
Rebecca, some fats come in solids like Crisco or butter. Others come in liquids like olive oils or any of a number of oils. From a nutritional standpoint, when would you want to use a solid? When would you want to use a liquid?
Great question. So from a nutritional standpoint, we go back to trying, if we're trying to choose the healthiest oils, you're going to be talking about mostly the liquid oils. So the canola oil, the soy oil, the vegetable-based oils, the olive oils, right? Once we get into using the ones, especially the ones which have been made solid through a chemical process. So this is when you see on the label partially hydrogenated soybean oil, palm kernel oil, whatever type of oil.
So that'd be Crisco or margarine?
Correct. And here's the kicker. So this is where the trans fat comes in. Everyone's heard trans fat, very, very bad. And in fact, there's been a lot of legislation about banning them and getting rid of them, or at least lowering their consumption in the products. But the problem there is that they undergo these typically liquid fats undergo this chemical process, making them solid. And it is through that oxidative process that these fats become unhealthy or worse for our arteries. Have you ever tried to like clean a pan that's been heavily Criscoed? You know what that feels like, how hard it is to get off the brush? That's in your body.
But butter is also a hard fat, and it's gone through times when we used margarines because we thought they were healthier, and now butter is in and margarine is out.
So butter is still healthier than something that's had to go through the trans fat process. The pure saturated fat of butter, the pure saturated state of the marbleization in a cut of beef, that is deemed healthier for your heart than taking these fats that are normally liquid and putting them through this process.
My guests are Rebecca Blake, Director of Clinical Nutrition at Mount Sinai Beth Israel, and Daniel Gritzer, Culinary Director at Sirius Eats. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we're inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org. Or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And let's go to a call. Dina from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, good afternoon. Yeah, yesterday, for example, I wanted to just have steamed vegetables, and I did zucchini with a little oil, virgin olive oil. It didn't fill me up. Is there anything you recommend, like just a vegetable that can be steamed with oil that's filling, like a grilled salmon, for example, instead of that?
A vegetable or a... specifically, not fish like salmon.
No. Forget salmon. Just a vegetable. I just wanted a vegetables yesterday, and I tried zucchini, and I found it really wasn't filling. Can you recommend a vegetable that's considered?
You want the oil to make it more filling?
Well, I guess so, because the vegetable by just steamed vegetable by itself didn't do the trick. I was still hungry.
Well, Dina, I can just tell you right now, I would love to tell you you can get optimal satiety, satiation, fullness out of steamed vegetables with a little oil, but what you're missing there is protein. So what we talk about as nutritionists as contributing to the ultimate state of satiety, the perfect satiety, is when you combine fiber and protein. And a little bit of fat, especially a healthy fat, even rounds that experience out a bit more. But without a protein in there, a tofu, a yogurt, a piece of fish, a lean piece of meat, you are probably going to be hungry.
Got it. Thank you so much.
But for vegetarians?
Tofu, beans.
Mm-hmm. Beans. I would also add a vegetable like zucchinis has a very high water content, so that's also going to contribute to it delivering a less full feeling in your stomach. Denser vegetables, maybe like a butternut squash, which I guess you could steam it, but also roast it with olive oil, might help a little bit too.
Sure. Potatoes, a starchy vegetable thrown in there is going to give you even more. It may be trying, that might take away from what you're trying to achieve with just having a kind of veggie-based meal, but it would help satiety a bit.
John from Paramus, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm basically an olive oil person, but I'm interested in peanut oil. What kind of use? When would you use peanut oil, like to fry or to cook with? What kind of foods?
You can use peanut. People really love to use peanut oil for deep frying and high heat cooking. It has a relatively high smoke point, so it's desirable from that vantage point. There are different kinds of peanut oil available. There's refined peanut oil, which has little to no nutty flavor. Then you have peanut oils where you actually do taste more of that peanut flavor. So it depends what you get. But I would say, in general, peanut oil, people like it for the high heat, deep frying experience.
Thank you for your call. There are a whole bunch of oils like peanut oil, corn, grapeseed, walnut that are natural. And then there's canola oil, which is a processed form of rapeseed. Are they all equal?
The ones you just mentioned, I put all in the same category as healthful fat sources, yes.
Whether it's processed or not.
The processing that canola oil goes through has not been found to be harmful.
And what about cold pressed? Why do we hear that some oils are cold pressed?
Yeah, you see.
Forget about extra virgin.
Right. Yeah, extra virgin is not good enough. It has to be cold pressed. It's you see it a lot on olive oil, and my understanding is that it's that cold pressed is not a regulated term. Extra virgin is a regulated term. Virgin is a regulated term. What cold pressed is telling you are two things. One is that the oil was extracted at lower temperatures, not using heat. You can imagine, in the same way that fat renders from a steak with heat, when you apply heat, it's easier. You're liquefying fat more. You're making it more fluid. It's easier to extract it. So they're telling you we've used low heat methods to extract this oil.
That's good?
Because heat can change the flavor of the oil. And so, for example, if you want an olive oil with a really, really good flavor, if you were to cook with it, you're going to start to erase a lot of that nuance. The flip side is extra virgin olive oil, I think, pretty much is part of the definition is that it hasn't been extracted using heat. So it's a little bit of a redundancy.
There's also the idea of nutrient degradation with heat. So, and that's, again, another very controversial topic across the board, not just with fats, but there is some potential nutrient loss or nutrient alteration, which may or may not be of any consequence, but it's one of these marketing things that people can pull off of and say, you know, this, we didn't use any heat, so nothing has been altered here, nothing has changed.
Well, extra virgin, they just are taking the cured olives and squeezing the oil out of it, aren't they?
Olive juice, basically.
Yeah.
Now, Daniel, you recently did a study about cooking olive oils under high heat. What did you find?
Right. So there are two sides to this, and I'll let Rebecca talk about the health side, although I looked into that a little bit. But you hear a lot, do not use olive oil with high heat, specifically extra virgin olive oil. It has a slightly lower smoke point than some other oils.
Should you use another kind of olive oil, the cheaper stuff?
Even if it's extra virgin, if you're going to use high heat, I recommend using a less expensive extra virgin olive oil because, like I said before, you're going to erase a lot of that nuance. So putting a really expensive, fancy bottle of beautiful olive oil in the pan and then obliterating its flavor is, you're pouring money down the drain. What I found from a taste perspective is that with really simple dishes, say something like Roman deep-fried artichokes, you will taste the olive oil in the finished product as compared to if you were to use a neutral oil. But as the dish becomes more complex, as the layers of flavors become more complex, the amount of olive oil relative to those other ingredients goes down. Like, let's say you're just sweating some onions and garlic before you add your chicken for your coq au vin or something like that, and all the red wine and everything else that goes in. It's very, very hard to taste the difference in the finished dish.
What about the idea that cooking olive oil under high heat is unhealthy?
I have found no evidence of this anywhere in the professional, peer-reviewed literature, health journals, medical journals. I did a really extensive search because I found that this was one of the issues we discuss, and it's just not, there's no proof. There's no proof. I think possibly the concept that people are drawing off of is this idea of acrylamide formation, which is something that's found when you cook starchy foods like potato in a very high heat oil, like palm. They've done studies with palm oil, coconut oil, canola oil, soybean oil, and they found that the higher the temperature, the more the formation of the acrylamides. And acrylamides are some of these things which some people will tell you are carcinogenic and some people will tell you they're not.
Is this why many people feel that fried foods are less healthy than, let's say, if you're doing those potatoes and you just put them in the oven without a lot of oil?
It's that, but it's also the type of fat that you might be using. If it's a primarily saturated fat rather than a poly or a monounsaturated fat, you're looking at the potential non-heart healthy benefits there.
So French fries can be made healthier if you use the right oil?
Definitely.
And what oil would that be?
I would use just straight old canola oil, vegetable oil. I would use something really simple. And of course, if you bake them in the oven and you only drizzle them with maybe a higher quality oil, like an olive oil or an extra virgin olive oil, just if you want that flavor on your French fries, they're not fries, they're baked. And we all know about baked fries and stuff. Yeah, they taste a little different, but if you're talking about calories consumed and calories, excess calories are what contributes to excess body weight, which is correlated to a host of medical problems, as we all know, diabetes, heart disease, stroke, hypertension, etc., then, yeah, you want to think about that. You want to think about what you're using.
We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll take some of the calls that have been coming in. Our number, 212-433-9692. You can also write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And my guests are Rebecca Blake, Director of Clinical Nutrition at Mount Sinai Beth Israel, and Daniel Gritzer, Culinary Director at Sirius Eats. We're talking about cooking with fats and oils on today's Please Explain. We're back with Please Explain, talking about cooking with fats and oils. Daniel Gritzer, Culinary Director at Sirius Eats, and Rebecca Blake, Director of Clinical Nutrition at Mount Sinai Beth Israel. Earlier, we had Hugh Atchison on here, and he talked about how oils can degrade very quickly. And Lou DiPaolo, who sells a lot of olive oil in his store in Little Italy, urges his customers to use the oil as quickly as possible once the bottle has been opened, because the oil will spoil. Do all oils go bad?
I think so.
Eventually, yeah.
So if you open up that something rare, like how often do I use a walnut oil? Mm. But I have one in my house.
That's right.
After 6 months, should I just assume that it's gone bad?
I wouldn't assume. I would check the expiration date, which all foods should have visible somewhere on their label or on the bottle itself. But smell it. I mean, do a smell check. That's one of the best ways to tell if something's not okay anymore.
What's the best way to store an oil or a fat?
Light, heat, air, and water are the enemies of fat and speed up the degradation of it. So you want a dark, cool place. You do not want to keep one of those translucent vegetable oil bottles out on your countertop in the sunshine, for example. Something like your walnut oil, you may even want to stick in the fridge because it's nice and cold and dark in there, and that may help keep it even longer.
Let's take a call from Michelle from Kearney, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just have a question for your guests regarding coconut oil. I've been hearing and reading that coconut oil is a good substitute and a more healthy substitute than using other oils. Is that true?
It's a really great question, and I get it a lot. It really The touted virtues of coconut oil are largely debated and largely unproven. There have been some studies in mice that show that a certain amount of the oil taken a day may reduce the amount of oxidative stress. Lowers their lipid levels a little.
So that's good if you want to keep mice healthy.
Exactly. And I was just talking to Daniel about this before we went on, that the amount we would have to consume as a full-fledged adult, I calculated I would have to be drinking 250 milliliters, which is 2 8-ounce cups of virgin coconut oil to reap that antioxidative benefit. So the jury is out. I know people swear by it. I know people are swishing with it. More power to you if you want to swish. But let me tell you something. If you want to swallow, okay, it is still going to be the same number of calories per milliliter, per tablespoon as every other type of oil. Fats all have the same number of calories.
Now, Michelle, you're in Kearney, New Jersey, where there, I don't know if there's still a lot of restaurants serving fish and chips.
There's very few left now. A lot of them have moved down to South Jersey, so it's really hard now to get good fish and chips in Kearney. One restaurant left.
Do you know what oil they use?
I don't know, to be perfectly honest with you. I really don't know.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I don't know what kind of oil they use. I would like to know, but I really don't know. Sorry to say that.
Oh, well, maybe somebody who has, maybe a British person will call in and tell us what they use on fish and chips. Thank you for your call. We're going to go now to, we're going to go to Phil from Mount Belmore. Is it Belmont, New Jersey?
Belmore.
Okay, hi.
Hi, how are you?
You want to ask about lard?
Yeah, you mentioned cooking with fats, and I was like, who cooks with fats? And you mentioned lard. I'm like, okay, there's one. The question actually is about sweat.
About what?
Suet.
Oh, it's suet. Okay.
Fat, like render suet. The pronunciation escapes me, obviously. Suet. What are the benefits?
Well, we don't want that fat to perspire, do we? That sweat.
Sweaty fat's not the best. Remember, water and fat don't go well together.
So, what about creating suet or lard or some of the others? Lard had a bad reputation for a long time. Is it coming back? Is it okay, Rebecca?
You know, it's coming back just because if you compare it to the trans fat movement of the Criscos, where Crisco, I'm sure we could find a commercial from whenever Crisco came out that touts it as being a healthy baking option. But the truth is that lard is also a saturated fat. It's all saturated. It's tasty as heck. And in moderation, use it. Use everything in moderation. But
it makes great pie crusts.
Delicious. Delicious mouthfeel. You know, it's great. But you have to just keep in mind, this is all in the context of your life and how much you're going to consume it over time. If you're eating a heavy source of lard every day, that's not going to be good for your heart. But if every so often you indulge in a baked good or something you know that's been fried in lard or baked with lard, go for it.
Now, what about suet? And what about bacon fat? Is that okay?
I mean, it's great for flavor. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves bacon, right? That's the thing. Everything's better with bacon. You can save your bacon fat. I don't usually do it, but people certainly do, and then spoon it into other dishes.
It's saturated fat. I'm not telling you never to use it. I'm not saying it doesn't have its proper place. If you have a normal cholesterol level, if you maintain a healthy body weight, if you are active and you have a good lifestyle, if occasionally you throw bacon fat into something, it's fine. It's just if you're eating a lot of trans fat products day after day after day, and by the way, you might not know there's trans fat in them because they, according to the FDA, you can label something as trans fat free if it has anything less than 1 gram of trans fat per serving. So let's look at a commercial box of cookies, and a serving size is 1 cookie, and it says 0 grams of trans fat.
We eat 10
it could
cookies.
It could be 0.8 grams of trans fat in that cookie. You eat 10, you've now had about 6 or 7 grams of trans fat. That's not great. You want to try to keep your trans fat very low. That has been proven to be the most detrimental fat. But again, you got to see, if you have 1 trans fat cookie a couple times a month, like, you're going to be fine.
Is there a difference between how our bodies process animal fats and vegetable fats?
I would say in the metabolic pathway of digesting fat, no. But ultimately, in your blood, it's different. It affects your lipid levels differently.
I'd add one other thing, which is that the more saturated a fat is, the more shelf stable it is, the less prone to rancidity the fat is. So it's your polyunsaturated fats, your safflower oils and those kinds of fats, which are going to degrade more rapidly in storage than the saturated fats. So that's one other thing to keep in mind.
What about clarified butter?
Yum.
Double yum.
Yeah. So clarified butter is where you take – butter is an emulsion that's mostly butter fat but also has water content and proteins plus a tiny bit of milk sugars and some other things. So clarified butter is where you melt the butter and you evaporate off all of the water. And then you also skim off those milk solids, which is that foam you see at the top of butter when you melt it. And what you're left with is much more pure butter fat, which raises its smoke point.
People have been writing in to ask about different things. One caller wants to know about rice bran oil. Is it good? Is it healthy?
I'm going to be honest and say I don't know a lot about rice bran oil, but it's going to be, as far as I can tell, it's just a grain-based oil and is probably fairly unsaturated and probably pretty innocuous.
And from a cooking standpoint, I don't personally use rice bran oil, but not for any particular reason. But I believe it has a very high smoke point, so that's one thing.
That's a good thing. If you're cook something on a high heat.
Exactly.
Is it true that grass and pasture-fed livestock yield eggs, butter, and milk that's higher in omega-3 fatty acids than grain-fed livestock? Peg asked that question.
It is true that those products we consider to be healthier. Is it because of the omega content? I can't speak to.
But they sure are considered healthier for all sorts of other reasons.
They are.
David from, oh no, where is it? I'm going to get so complicated here. We have a new system and I'm a bit confused by it. Rob from South Salem, hi, you're on the air. Rob, are you there? Okay. So, David was going to ask the same question. David, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Tell me about duck fat. Why it tastes so good? Is it good for you? Is it bad for you? How do you guys like to use it? Because I love it.
I love duck fat.
Yeah, and frankly, chicken fat, schmaltz.
Not great. I'm just going to tell you right now, not great. It's a totally saturated fat.
As is duck fat, right? I mean,
yeah, duck. I mean, Peking duck. Is there anything better in the world? But it is really. It's like it's up there with just high fat meats. It's a contributor to high cholesterol and ultimately heart disease. So occasionally, it's okay.
Sean on Twitter asks, "What exactly is cooking spray?"
It's a fat that's basically delivered in an aerosolized type form.
Does that make it less healthy?
No, I mean it makes it. What it makes it is very portion controllable, and that's where its appeal comes from. I occasionally use it. It's not unhealthy because it comes through a spray can. I think it's actually a really good alternative for people that don't measure their amount of oil in a fry pan, or really just need a very fine coating to heat something up at a low heat, but just so it doesn't stick to the pan. Also, it's great for baking if you don't want to deal with like smearing butter or Crisco or whatever all over your pan.
Yeah, it's helpful for applying a very thin, even layer.
Are you suggesting that Crisco isn't good?
It's got some trans fat in it, even though they say it doesn't. It just does. It just defies the labeling laws. That's all. So it falls under the category of a fat that's been made solid when it should exist as a liquid in real life, and then they put it through this hydrogenation process.
It uses palm oil?
Yes, but the palm oil in and of itself is not the issue. So palm oil is partially saturated. Palm kernel oil is the one that's very saturated. So it's confusing. Palm kernel oil is like 81% saturated and palm oil is only about 40% saturated. So I'm not concerned about palm oil, really.
Rochelle writes, what's going on in a product like Olivio, which is a spread made from olive oil? Is this like a trans fat? Because it says no trans fat on the label.
It is not like a trans fat. The process they're using, there are a few of the higher end, usually organic brands. I'm not sure if Olivia is organic, but that's besides the point. They are using a process to make the fat that would be liquid. They are using it to make it solid, but it doesn't have the detrimental health effects.
What about, I can't believe it's not butter, another listener wants to know.
It's not great. Is
it similar to margarine?
It's like margarine.
Now, margarine was considered a healthy food, also less expensive when in the 50s.
Sure.
When did we realize that it wasn't?
When we realized that the hydrogenation process is not a healthy process and is possibly more detrimental to your health than actually eating saturated fat, which occurs naturally, such as the kind we get from dairy and from meat products.
Mary on Twitter asks, how about avocado oil? Is it because it has a very good high smoke point? Do you cook with avocado oil ever, Dan?
I don't. You know, one of the things, because fat oils go rancid so quickly, I try to minimize the number of different ones that I keep at home. So I'll have, you know, one oil that I typically use for high heat cooking, like a canola or safflower or vegetable oil, and I'll have some nice olive oil at home, maybe the more expensive one and the slightly less expensive one. So I don't have firsthand experience with avocado oil. If it has like a high smoke point, I did jot down a little list of smoke points that I can check. It looks like around 375 to 400 ballpark is the smoke point for avocado oil, so it's pretty good.
Liz wrote into our show page, in terms of health, is there a difference among olive oils? Virgin, extra virgin, just the plain old olive oil?
Not in my view. Not really. I mean...
And we've got to sneak Drew from Schenectady in here. You got to make it very quick, Drew.
Okay, great. I just had a question about this thing called butter coffee, where you take a pot of coffee and you take a tablespoon of pasture butter and a tablespoon of organic coconut oil and throw it all in the blender, blend it up, and then drink it.
Might taste good, not healthy, not going to make you lose weight, total myth.
Okay,
but
cool.
It's really popular all throughout hipster Brooklyn. So.
Totally. If you're wearing skinny jeans and I have a beard, you're probably drinking it.
I shaved my beard off earlier this year.
But you're in Schenectady.
Yeah, I'm up here now.
Thank you so much for calling us. Well, have we pretty much cleared things up, do you think?
It depends. If you have more questions, we can keep
going.
No, but
we've run out of time.
Oh.
To the extent you can clear them up, yes. But, you know, if we do this again in another 6 months, there might be new info.
My thanks to both of you. Rebecca Blake, Director of Clinical Nutrition at Mount Sinai, Beth Israel, and Daniel Gritzer, Culinary Director at Sirius Eats.